Hello, everybody. I think I would prefer sometimes to just have music going on in the background. Just because it punctuates my points, or lack thereof. Yes. Anyways. Hello. Hello. Is there a guest in this episode? Is there a guest? Nah, it's just another Greg drop. Ew. Yes. Greg Bornstein here. Chief Looper, Consciousness Disruptor, Cultural Hypnotist, Curator of Experience. And, well, just an overall sweet guy. Yes, we're all about disrupting consciousness on this show. I'm trying to bring you radically unique ideas. Other guests that I have on are, they come from all over the place. What am I even doing with this show? Sometimes I wonder. If you go back and listen to the earliest episodes, the real early episodes, it was me teaching everything I was learning about, putting some order amidst the chaos. And since I've started the show, things have become even more chaotic in my head in some ways. And perhaps more expansive in others. I mean, I have a deep reverence and love for every single person who's decided to come on this show. And I don't know if I've said it before on this show, but there definitely were times when I said, okay, this person's going to come on and I am going to give them, I'm going to rib them. I'm going to really provoke them, poke them until they realize that they're not even qualified to be calling themselves whatever self-proclaimed consulting, service-based title, life coach, healer, psychic. At some point, I thought that. I mean, for some reason, I'm probably for the wrong reasons. I'm a little nicer to the psychics. But I never knew when I started this that I was going to become as open-minded as I am now, even. I've completely flipped on the UFO thing. Even some, should I say UFO? Should I say ETs? Perhaps remote viewing now has more of a thing going on. A lot of stuff about ancient aliens, right? I mean, the show doesn't really do the topic justice, but there are some out-of-place artifacts that really have no explanation, and it seems that academia doesn't talk about them. There seems to be also, and again, it's a question of coincidence versus agenda, right? Because let's think about it this way. A lot of people talk about actively suppressing consciousness. I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot from people in the quote-unquote fringe community that, and I first saw this when I went all the way into pre-Gaia TV network David Wilcock, who I'm not going to say, I will say he's an influence. I don't know if I believe everything. In some cases, you get to a certain point where, and this might even happen with me, so consider this a, this is one of those, they're going to play this later kind of things when or if I ever take off into popularity. But at a certain point, somebody with that many followers talking about the things that he's talking about, secret space programs, time travel, all the ascension stuff, consciousness, charging $333 in three payments for his class on the ascension. You know, it's one of those things where you have to realize some people just like making money. I'm sure you do realize that. This I certainly have said on the show before. When I go to someone, if someone gives me a name and I go look online and find their website, and it's some little GeoCities, 24-bit graphic, like a GIF that just has two positions, but it's a static image just rotating back and forth like a, a rabbit in the hat, anything like that, I'm going, I think this person's legitimate. As a matter of fact, here's a multi-million dollar idea for you. putting this out now, this is copyright Open Loops, Craig Bornstein here. Retro internet. There is going to be a trend for bringing back, they do it with pop culture, right? They do it with the 80s and certainly Stranger Things, and J.J. Abrams did it for Steven Spielberg. You see it everywhere. Everybody's nostalgic for the way things were at a certain time period. Not even the actual period itself, but the way the films looked during that time period. People should start doing that for their websites again. I think it's going to take off. At some point, people are going to want those GeoCity original Yahoo pages, alt groups, those alt.net groups, something where it's just dialogue-based, people writing messages to each other, no more images. We're in a proliferation of images. There was a time when people were just writing things to each other on the internet. Now that things are visual, do you know how much pressure that puts on a quack peddler like me? I now have to think about making things visually stimulating for you. I studied writing in high school. I could probably drum up a pretty good 5-paragraph essay on psyops and psychotronic devices designed to stop your brain from getting interfered with government waves and, alternate weather signals developed by HARP. I don't even know what I'm talking about, but that's the kind of stuff you used to read in those groups. There's going to be a backlash. It'll come back. Trust me. It's either going to go back to that just for good times, or you're already going to be dead, sucked into the metaverse, and, your soul will be dead, but digitally, you're going to be having a great time. The point is, I had no idea where I was going with all this stuff. Kind of like this episode in some ways. I didn't really. David Wilcock, I found him because I was reading stuff about 2012, and I saw a video that he put up about what 2012 was all about. And what I learned from that video was, not only does this guy think he is the I don't know if he still goes around doing this, though he put out an entire book. He is the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, renowned psychic, for those that don't know. He also believed at the time that, and you do see this. This is a weird one, actually. You see the pine comb. He did this whole lecture about how the pine comb is, on top of the Pope's staff, and you see it in the Vatican, and you see it all over in architecture in New York City and scattered all over the world. They have this pine comb thing, and he was saying, well, why? Because the pineal gland. This is a suppressed knowledge. People know that your pineal gland is the source. It's your third eye. It's where you can manifest. It's where you can have lucid dreams, astral travel. And everybody knows it, and it's hidden in plain sight. And he was the one that pointed me to this idea that the world's elites don't want you to know how much creation power you have. They want to give you a clue it's there. They'll put it in the stuff to let you know that it is powerful. The people that know, wink, wink. But most of us don't realize that this thing between our eyes, slightly above, is the source of creativity, creation, life itself. And David Wilcock's idea is that life itself, that's totally BS. I'm just saying that because it felt... See, that's what you get. When you start becoming a podcaster, you're able to put sentences together that might... Or a broadcaster in general. You put things together that sound like they have meaning, but they really don't. But again, if you say it like they do, someone might take you seriously. Now, and most of you should take this seriously. I'm taking it seriously. Most of you should. Some of you are going to just laugh and go, what is this guy saying? But what I took seriously at the time, or at least considered, was the possibility that 2012 might be a time where the universe was shifting to a place where we had manifestation powers again. He made this convoluted argument that essentially, based on the timelines, we were all going to go to a place where it's back to a blank slate and we have full access to our pineal glands and now all humans can create and cool. I don't really think much changed. Then, of course, you get the people that say, well, 2012 was wrong. It was actually 2020. And then, of course, we had the pandemic. But, I mean, look, I don't really... is this a spiritual awakening? There is a bit of an awakening going on. There is the idea that we were all forced to come together and focus on each other as a larger collective online. Hint, hint, metaverse coming soon. But yes, no, that was the beginning of us all kind of living together online for a little bit, not working, struggling to figure out what was going on in the world. It allowed for ideas that were perhaps a little more alternative to show up. UFO sightings went up during the pandemic. Remember that? More people were seeing UFOs. Why? Because they had the time. They had the time to pay attention. They weren't doing anything. So, perhaps in a way, I mean, no one said, I once posted something on Facebook that said spiritual awakening. It was something along the lines of, what did I say? It was spiritual awakening, painful or ecstatic. Something like that. It was something about, you know, is it painful or is it blissful? That kind of thing. And a lot of people said painful and blissful. I mean, it's both. Some people did come down hard on one side or the other. So, you know, and not that I'm against bipartisan spiritual awakening conversations. But what I mean is that I think there is often, if there's a commonality among the people I've interviewed on the show, there's often a traumatic event that precedes this new insight, this new interest in becoming a healer, this intuition that all of a sudden comes that you didn't experience before. So I do think these things work hand in hand. You know, a spiritual awakening would be great, but sometimes it really takes a tragedy to get people to wake up. What does that have to do with manifestation powers? Well, people started realizing that the systems that they were subscribing to held them back and didn't let them know that they could create something themselves. So a lot of people went out and did that. Hence, you're listening to Open Loops right now. So if there is anything that is true to that point, it's that, yeah, it is dangerous. Think about economically. It is dangerous for people to be able to produce podcasts in the way they're doing. And I don't just mean because Joe Rogan exists, okay? I don't mean that kind of danger. But, in a way, think about that. It definitely goes to prove the point of someone having their platform and messing things up just because it's their platform. They can choose whatever they want to do, and the critics are going to be there for them. But what I was going to say is that this notion that we do have creative power, whether it's coming from the third eye, whether it's coming from just people going, hey, I want to do I want to create something in this world that's mine. That is something that doesn't really work for corporations, for the people in power. Sure, it works, but it's not ideal. Because their entire business, the entire thing, is based on you serving them. It's just the way it is. Now, some people are happy doing this. That's what's interesting about the Great Resignation. I'm intrigued by the people that are still fine doing their day jobs. Nothing wrong with it. Do it. If that's what brings you joy, if you can succeed within a system that's built for you, but at a certain level, is there something about how do you establish your kingship, your queenship, whatever it is, within the structure that's imposing itself on you? How do you find that freedom? Is it possible for everyone to find that freedom? Or do institutions keep you stuck inside no matter what? That is the metaverse fear, right? This digital landscape where everything's decentralized. How decentralized do you think it's going to be for long? Because there are a certain small group of people that have most of the power, and they are at some point going to regulate it. People question Facebook now, but soon enough, people always rise back to the top. One person with the most money, could buy BitChute, could buy any of these places, and then all of a sudden, you get, you know, everybody's going to move off BitChute. That's why the alt groups, let's go back to those message boards. That's where there wasn't any advertising. It was just pure, I guess there were banner ads once in a while, but it was pure alternative perspective. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the strangeness, some of the weird aspects of the paranormal that I'm still wrapping my head around after doing close to 200 interviews at this point. I feel that there are a lot of, you know, when they talk about the rules of the universe in pop culture, when a set of, a great example of a show that has no rules, for instance, is Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty, based on Back to the Future in a lot of ways, but you have Rick Sanchez, who is the mad scientist grandfather, and then Morty, who is this teenager, and they jump around parallel universes, they time travel, they break the fourth wall. It's insane. No rules on the show, but that is the nature of the show. But if we're talking about, say, Seinfeld, part of the rules of that universe are that you will not break the fourth wall. Nobody breaks the fourth wall in that show. If a character did step out and break the fourth wall, it would have to be for some presentational reason that had nothing to do with what was actually happening in the episode. Those are the rules of the universe. So, there's certain rules that paranormal and supernatural conspiracy believers have that I still, after all this time, question, I suppose. For instance, let's go with one of the most controversial, just to start. Let's go all the way there. This idea of depopulation. Now, just in case, you know, Spotify is listening to these words, transcribing them, and then decides to ban me. Here's what I'll say. Recent conversations about depopulation would make it seem like there is an elaborate scheme to get rid of a majority of the people after a series of global events that are then tied to, what, the pharmaceutical industry? Why not just kill a bunch of people? Why not just bomb a bunch of people? Why not just go right for the kill? I mean, what is it? Does it have... Why not poison the people? Does it have to be subtle? Does it have to be, I mean, and with this many people talking about what's going on in pharmaceuticals, are we really going to, why would they stay with that method of doing things? Don't you think that if you had some grand scheme, there'd be an easy... I'm just saying, depopulation is... Why the scheme around it? Now, one of the answers I've had on this show is, well, that they get off on this. This is what psychopaths and sociopaths do. They have a... The game has to be out in the open, and the idea of setting an elaborate scheme makes them feel more ego fulfilled, and I'm just going, why does it always feel like an excuse? It reminds me of Yuri Geller, the Israeli psychic, right? Is Yuri Geller was a psychic from Israel, came into America in the 70s and blew up because he could bend spoons with his mind. But whenever the spoons wouldn't bend, like the time James Randi went on Johnny Carson and switched out Geller's spoons for ones that wouldn't bend physically, then Geller said, oh, well, there's something, the spirits aren't with me tonight. So those are some, that's something you get a lot, right? That he said if magicians are around or skeptics were around, that his stuff wouldn't work as much. How about the psychic where it does work, no matter what? How about that person? I mean, where is that? It's strange to me. There's certain rules. UFOs. The blurry thing. I mean, I do think Neil deGrasse Tyson has a point about why they won't show themselves beyond blurry photos or catching them quickly. Then they disappear. Now, I will say I do think there is something on the other side of that, which is this idea of, well, they are creating a level of consciousness that leads people back to a childlike wow moment, which is what humanity is missing. And once we're all in the wow, this comes from Grant Cameron, by the way, in an essay he wrote in Alan Steinfeld's book, Making Contact. I like that theory. I like the idea that we are waiting for the ETs don't want to come down until we're more benevolent and loving of each other. Therefore, until that point, they're going to give us the tease, if you will. So that's another one that's interesting. The other paradox that I find fascinating, I suppose in general, is, well, in general, like a broader picture with the pine cone thing, this idea of the elite putting symbols into things, but not telling us why, yet doing it openly. Michael Feely, who is a great symbologist and decoder, a la Dan Brown in a way, or Dan Brown's character, he came on my show and explained this a little bit. And again, like the tarot and the photos and in general, the nature of esoteric reality itself being abstract, laying it out. If you were to write out the esoteric on a document and just say, hey, this means this, this means this, this means this and this. Well, A, it would make it less fun. But B, it would ruin the magic of it because part of the esoteric involves a level of consciousness that is beyond words in a way, beyond mere explanation. We're dealing with immaterial forms, therefore accessing the complete truth about those things via words, which are illusory substances. In a way, illusory matter, if you will, in themselves, then kind of deludes the point of it. So, yes, symbolic stay symbolic, I get that. But the idea of this agenda, the idea that they're putting hidden messages in public about human potential or suppressing human potential, makes me just go, why not? What is the deal? What is this half and half thing they're doing? I don't know why the global elites, who are... Some people think they're suppressing the knowledge. Some people think they're pointing to the knowledge. Some people are saying they're pointing to the knowledge for themselves, and we're not supposed to know, but they're still putting it out there in films and television and symbols. Why this weird relationship, though, to secrecy? Why not make everything secret? I mean, this is the thing. Why, at a certain point, or maybe there is. See, that's the thing. Maybe the pineal gland is step one. And there's so many more secrets. I'm not a hermetic magician. I've never really studied it too deeply. I have friends that are into it. I've done a little reading on it, and I'm going to be going deeper down that rabbit hole and sharing my discoveries with all of you. But if the pine cone is what they're showing us in public, and that's the realm of the imagination and creativity and the astral plane, then what aren't they telling us? Or what isn't obvious? What one symbol is in one sculpture across the world that if people meditated on and realized the truth of, they discover something even more amazing than the astral plane? Maybe that's just looking at a tree and connecting with nature. Some would say that. I suppose the paradox I'm pointing out is why is it both in mysticism? What is this obsession with putting it out there but not explaining it? It's a little. I don't understand the epistemological significance of having everything like that in the realm of the esoteric be like that. But it's still a thing. It's still a thing. The Illuminati, they know what they're doing. That's always the byline. They know what they're putting out there. They know what we're supposed to read between the lines. Which means, hey, if there's something there isn't putting out there but they have knowledge about, I want to know that. We'll find out in season 5 of this show for sure. Now, if there's any other paradoxes I'm thinking about, I'm thinking about the ghost realm there's one of the paradoxes that I've simply confronted is that I truly have no idea what's real and what isn't. And I'm going to get my friend Ben Pratt, who is the owner of a bar in New York City, one of the co-owners of this bar, as is on 50th and 10th. I've mentioned that bar before. Great place. He was telling me about pragmatism the other night and the work of Richard Rorty. And I've heard a little bit about pragmatism, but here's an idea for you. He said his whole life, and I'm with him, that this very concept that we have any intellectual knowing about the nature of reality, that we can say definitively from inside our heads and experience that there even is an absolute reality, he now believes does not work. But when someone says there is a God, or someone says there's a ghost or there's a UFO and they have enough of a sense of that experience and it is real, then that is their truth. And pragmatically, we would be best to just accept that that is what's true for them. We have what's true for us, and we can't make any claims about absolute truth whatsoever. So we can coexist knowing that none of us are ever going to get to the bottom of anything. I'm going to have to do some more digging into this, but thank you, Ben, for that little tidbit. I like that view. In one way, it reminds me of pantheism, the idea that everything we think exists could exist. But on the other hand, it also, I can't even say that because I am limited by my personal experience. And that's really what came as a result of this show. I mean, it is intellectually superior to claim that I know that everybody that's talked to me about having an experience when they're in a young child and seeing a spirit float in their room, it's imaginary. I mean, that's not necessarily the case, especially if a group of people see it together. There are just some things here that do not seem to have information, that aren't solid. We don't have solid ground for them. The other thing that, oh gosh, yeah, here's another one that is kind of trippy in this field, is disinformation among the UFO people. There are a lot of people that say, well, this UFO person just putting out disinfo. They're a government shill. But then that person will say, well, this person saying that is disinformation. And then they say, well, the government telling you that this is disinformation and this information is also disinformation. So there is a lot of people claiming. That's what a psyop is. Sam Tripoli, on his excellent podcast, Tinfoil Hat, also talks about psyops a lot. It's this idea of psychological warfare, making people not sure what to believe. Cultural gaslighting. I'm a cultural hypnotist. Yes, we're trying to influence the masses in some ways. I'm trying to get open people up to new possibilities, and cultural gaslighters are just trying to confuse your possibilities as an act of deliberate manipulation to make you poorer and the end of things, but worse off. Yeah, it is really hard to know what's real and what isn't. At one point, people thought that, you know, we're talking Blink-182, that having Tom DeLonge out there talking about UFOs was something that people in the UFO community at first went, great, so happy. So happy that we can finally have a conversation about this, because someone in the mainstream is very adamant about caring about whether they're UFOs. But then he started to the stars, and then they said it's correlated with the government, therefore they're pushing an agenda, and I've heard it's an attacking alien agenda and all this stuff. I mean, I'm still happy it's out there, even if it's the wrong agenda. I'm happy that UFOs are being taken seriously. I'm happy right now that they've called in NASA for a group of, they've called for religious leaders to come forward to discuss how we deal theologically with the existence of extraterrestrials. That's weird. But is it because NASA wants to educate them and say what they can and can't say so that we have a giant disinformation movement? See, here's the problem. All this stuff, it's no wonder people get... I felt glimpses of this. I'm going to admit to you right now, I have experienced glimpses of the paranoid, tinfoil-wearing conspiracy junkie when you go on the internet. Because when you are constantly being told that this is true and that it's not, this is true and then it's not, and you go down the rabbit hole and the rabbit hole and the rabbit hole. I mean, these are the rabbit holes, the original rabbit holes. When people say go down the rabbit holes, this is the original stuff, all right? You can start to lose grip on reality. You really can. And one question leads to another question leads to another question. So you have to do something productive with all this. Perhaps, who knows, read a book, write a book on it, actually, better than that, start a podcast, say hi to your family, go make love with someone. I mean, very practical things, but it is dangerous. I have felt on the edge of madness some afternoons, going down this paradigm and seeing one person says, this ain't true. It's, I get it. The fact that I've been reading about this stuff so long and there isn't ever one definitive truth whatsoever. And once you put one truth out there, someone could instantly just pull the carpet out from under you. It is mind-numbing. Remember I interviewed Andy Bashago of Project Pegasus, time traveler? I had somebody the other day reach out to me and go, yeah, man, I've been talking to someone. He says, Andy Bashago's all disinformation. I mean, what do I do with that? I think this guy is supposed to be one of the most credible cases of time travel, but as soon as someone says, oh, yeah, disinfo, complete disinfo, I'm sitting here going, what the heck? Come on. How do I know? It's rude. So next time you're at a party with people, don't scream fake news. Scream disinformation. And see what happens. You might have some fun. It's a very weird time out there. I know we're on the brink of something strange going on geopolitically. The Olympics is happening. There may be UFOs coming in soon. Sounds exciting to me. But what I would say is this. Yes, there are some truths that we don't have the full answer to. I'm so glad I haven't dismissed everyone's view. And I'm honored. One of my favorite things people say to me after I do an interview with them on the show is, thank you for not judging. Thank you for not being condescending. Thank you for letting me be heard. And you know what? That's very important to me. That's very important. That's the empathy we need in this world. Again, if their beliefs are not hurting anyone else and have actually benefited people's lives, but they don't go along with the mainstream corporate military industrial complex, this is how it's supposed to work, this is what academia is, academic standards, all this stuff, the common baseline knowledge, why dismiss them? So as we continue on this show, and as we get deeper towards me having a psychological breakdown once I am told that I'm not even information and I'm fake, which might be true. I mean, that's the big thing of this, right? That you're listening to this right now, but let's be real. I mean, the metaverse is, you're already in it. That's the thing people don't talk about enough. You're already in it. how's that for a mind bend? Not saying you actually are yet. You definitely are. And what I mean by that is that there's no difference between being on social media and listening to this podcast and being plugged into something that's just more visually enhanced and created by digital pixels. It's just somebody is deciding to corporatize it. So, which metaverse do you want to live in? Which universe do you want to live in? The universe is already taken by corporate. Now you want to be in a digital thing, the digital people running the digital world? Escape. Have a conversation with someone. My gosh. And look, if you want to explore this last interview I did with David Brager about exploring your internal universes, your metaverses, your multiverses inside, hey, that's why I'm doing hypnosis sessions with people now. And that's why we're exploring the realms of altered states of consciousness and using, well, the unconscious to take you to places you never dreamed were possible of going. So that's a little catch up on where I'm at with everybody so far in this show. I mean, it changes every day, but just wanted to let you know about some of the paradoxes I found in the fringe, as well as some reflections on how I relate to the fringe as this show keeps going. Now, did I teach anything very practical in this show? Maybe not. Maybe it was a basic intro to a intro of pragmatism. Someone told me about what pragmatism was, and then I told you what they told me about it, which, if that's not Plato, I don't know what is. But sometimes I just like talking to you. I'm curious if you, as you're listening, have any thoughts on anything I've discussed, any insights into your experience into the supernatural, the alternative, the fringe. Does your family love you? Do they hate you? Do they not understand you? Do you need a friend? I'm here for you. Feel free to follow me. Reach out on at the Greg Bornstein on Instagram. Send me a DM. Love to hear from you. And if you enjoy Open Lubes, make sure to follow this podcast. Like it, subscribe, leave a 5-star review. If you do it on Spotify, there are 3 dots. You just click the three dots and then boom, give the show a rating. I really appreciate you listening. We're going to get into some pretty elfish, weird stuff coming up this Thursday. Looking forward to it. Get a little witchy, get a little mythical. You'll love it. Talk to you soon.